I started murdering people, there'd be none of you left.
Disclaimer. The following broadcast gives a true and honest account of the events described, and all evidence and details herein are solely factual. What you are about to hear is real and may disturb you. Caution is strongly advised. Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
If you enjoy our show and find our research interesting, please leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform. Something that small really does go a long way in helping us out. You can find out more about us and our work at www.deadsoulspodcast.com or over on Instagram by searching our name. As always, thank you for joining us. Hello there, stranger. It's definitely been a while since we last spoke, but that's okay. If you follow us over on Instagram, you will have seen us post about a new format of our show in January 2024. Well, guess what? It's January 2024. Well, a lot has gone on here at Dead Souls HQ in the last 2 months since we dropped our last episode. We most certainly will be reformatting the show towards the end of this month, but I didn't want to just wait until then to release an episode. Over the festive period, I had the opportunity to research and write a few new episodes, and I wanted to ensure that those episodes saw the light of day, this episode being one of those. So, a little update for you guys. The new format show will drop its first new episode here on February the 4th. You don't need to do anything if you're already subscribed. It'll be delivered as normal. If you aren't subscribed, now is your opportunity to give us a follow and make sure that you're with us from our fresh new start. We'll release a few episodes between now and then in the current format, just to keep you guys entertained in the dark depths of January. But wait, there's more. In March, I'm launching a brand new podcast called The North Atlantic. This will run alongside, obviously, Dead Souls, but will be completely unrelated in every other way. I'm teaming up with a great new team of experts on this one. We're going to be discussing historical and cultural phenomena and events and how they change the world and the current zeitgeist. More on that one closer to when it drops, however. Finally, I'm currently working on a book that I'm hoping that you can all have your hands on by the end of the year. It's a little ditty about how the satanic panic of the 80s and 90s left a legacy which still resonates today in internet subculture and political echo chambers. It's going to be a laugh riot. Anyway, that's me. You well? On with tonight's show! Every so often, I like to take a step back from my research into the strange, dark and macabre, and delve into a subject with much more of an immediate threat, shall we say. In the past, we have spoken about Brexit, violence in modern society, end-of-world triggers, racism, and the opioid crisis, to name just a few. Well, tonight, with the festive season not even yet a distant memory, we bring you some New Year cheer with something I've been tracking for quite a while. So I'm going to share my thoughts and research with you all about a very current theory quite possibly playing out before our very eyes. But before we delve into that, I just want to state that this is not a political podcast. Those who are regular listeners will know that I generally keep my political views out of my episodes. For clarity, this isn't going to be a political episode. It's really more about society, the future, and where Western nations are heading. That said, I'm always happy to have positive and constructive discussions with anyone who wants to reach out. Feel free, as always, to DM me, email me, or leave a comment on our Instagram, and I'll happily engage. Just remember to keep things friendly, folks, and remember the saying about opinions. Anyway, let's get into it. What if I told you that several well-known billionaires are actually trying to destroy the world? I'm not talking about Lex Luthor or some superhero movie. We are very much talking about reality tonight. Have you ever taken the time to read about some of the decisions that the rich and powerful make? Have you read about those decisions and not quite understood why they were making those decisions? What were they thinking? What was the thought process that went into those decisions? Are they trying to make things worse for them, or us, or the business interests that they represent? Well, actually, yes, some of them actually are taking steps to destabilize and bring ruin to society as we know it. I can even name names. It's no real secret. But why would somebody actively try to bring on the collapse of society? Specifically, Western society. There is actually sound logic to the thought process behind it. It stems from a project management mindset and removing the emotional elements from the project, leaving simple mathematical, financial, and planning data, then making those decisions for that data. Let's say you have a problem, for example, a growing problem. When would it be best to tackle that problem? When it's tiny and takes only one man to resolve it? Or when it's grown to a magnitude where it takes a team of 70 men, or perhaps more, and perhaps greater financial investment to tackle the issue? Well, what if you have received a diagnosis of skin cancer, for example? Maybe a mole has been discovered on your back. It's about the size of a pea. Well, you're going to need surgery, right? It's not going to be pleasant. In fact, it's probably really going to suck, but you need to get it done. Would you rather have the surgery early, when the problem is small, when the operation might take less than an hour, and you only have to experience hospital as an outpatient? Or would you rather wait until the mole grows into a full-blown tumour, and the surgery becomes life-threatening, and a longer, more laborious experience? I think the answer is fairly straightforward, right? I mean, you'd want the procedure early, obviously. Now, we all watch the news. We spend more time than is healthy on social media. We take note of influences that we probably shouldn't. We are all aware of the state of Western society right now. We're in a mess, folks. A crisis that has been slowly brewing since 2016 due to various factors. We are all feeling it, whether we're in the United States, the United Kingdom, Europe, or Australia. Many people believe that societal collapse is coming, that it's inevitable, that our current path is unsustainable. This isn't a scaremonger. Those people are out there, and they number in their millions. You don't have to search too hard to find them. Hell, you might be one of them. I might be one of them. They are common people amongst us. They aren't a scourge. They aren't an enemy. They are average Westerners who can see the writing on the wall. Well, the wealthy can see those issues in politics, social dynamics, race, immigration, the economy, culture, religion, and international power dynamics too. With us being in the data age, we all have free access to the same information if we want to seek it out. Whether we are a global billionaire business chairman, or a baker, or a stockbroker, a fireman, or an artist. The difference, however, is the financial gap. Billionaires and significant financial investors might think, well, if it's going to happen anyway, you might as well get it done early and as fast as possible. Believing, of course, that there is a better world on the other side. You see, war, society collapse, and global emergency doesn't affect the rich and wealthy in the same ways that it does those who are lesser financially fortunate, shall we say. Money gives you options. As I said, those who believe in an upcoming societal collapse believe that a better world is on the other side. Belief that a world where we can fix the mistakes that we inherited and remake society and culture in our own preferred image. This belief system, or philosophy rather, is called accelerationism. Accelerationism is a unique kind of political philosophy because it's currently being embraced. Embraced on both sides of the political spectrum, the far right and the far left, and indeed everything in between. As you know, 2024 is going to bring another significantly important election year, particularly for the United States and the United Kingdom. Also, the European parliamentary elections are scheduled for June 2024, so next year really is an important year for the West. And with the West teetering on the edge of fragility and heading into these elections with so much naivete and so much at stake and so much that could, shall we say, go either way, it's the perfect time to talk about accelerationism. So what exactly is accelerationism? Despite the ism in the name, accelerationism isn't so much a movement as a concept. A concept that can be applied to any political leaning, hence the fact that it's been embraced by both sides of the political spectrum. The basic gist is that if a system is doomed to fail, accelerating that system's missteps will help it fail faster. The goal being is to accelerate the system to the point that it can no longer sustain itself and ultimately implodes, guilt-free and no-blame coup d'etat. Wikipedia accurately describes accelerationism as, quote, "Accelerationism is a range of revolutionary and reactionary ideas in left-wing and right-wing ideologies that call for the drastic intensification of capitalist growth, technological change, infrastructure sabotage, and other processes of societal change to destabilize existing systems." The term itself, whilst being a fairly new name, is a concept that has been around for a long time. One early example is that of one Karl Marx. In 1848, the same year that he published the Communist Manifesto, Marx released a set of statements that are somewhat surprising today in that they are actually very pro-capitalism and free trade. But they make more sense when you put them next to Marx's belief that capitalism, quote, "pushes the antagonism of the proletariat and the bourgeoisie." In other words, by favouring free trade, he was hastening the revolution and thus advocated accelerationism. A long time before it had a name, Marx targeted capitalism in a way that many modern accelerationists do. But the same concepts have been applied to all kinds of societal systems, including racism, sexism, and even wokeism. As much as I hate that word, but it's true, to name just a few. You can make the argument that there's a technological accelerationism inherent in the discussion around the singularity from people like Ray Kurzweil, Elon Musk, Sam Altman, and all those types of guys. The idea that the singularity is coming and that super intelligent AI is inevitable and the better option is to help it fully emerge. This is so that we can shape what is going to become and, whatever problems arise from that, we can start working now to innovate our way out of it in advance. This might not sound too crazy, right? Well, bear with me. Let's take a step back. The term accelerationism has been attributed to a 2008 blog post by critical theory professor Benjamin Noyes. In his initial writings, Noyes, in fact, does cite Marx, but he also states that he read a book years earlier that he had mostly forgotten about, but that lent him in the name for his concept. That book is likely to be the fantasy novel titled Lords of Light. It was published in 1967 and was written by Roger Zelazny. Zelazny uses the term, although in a much different way in the book, which is really more about accelerating human development to a higher level, sort of like a godlike status. The accelerationists in the book are the people working to make that happen. Anyway, I've completely sidetracked. Read the book if it sounds interesting to you. It's available on Amazon for like $8, and no, this is not an advertisement. Anyway, Noyes admits that he read the book and that subconsciously his brain linked this concept to the term given by the author, no litigation. It was Benjamin Noyes who gave the idea its name, but it was in fact English philosopher Nick Land who took the name and really expanded on it. It was, Land claims, an idea that he had been playing with for decades, but he just didn't quite have a name for it. Land wrote about it in an article that he authored called A Quick and Dirty Guide to Accelerationism. In the article, he also gives credit to Karl Marx as an early envisionist of the concept. Yes, envisionist is a word in common English usage, yet hasn't made its way into a dictionary as yet. Look it up, interesting. Land also names Friedrich Nietzsche, Gilles Deleuze, and Félix Guattari as members of the same group. Now, I know I'm butchering the pronunciation of these names, so I apologize for my ignorance of the French language and its dialects. Now, Nietzsche, or Nietzsche, needs no introduction, but I'll take a moment to explain the two other gentlemen who I've mentioned. Deleuze was a French philosopher who was born, lived, and educated in Paris. Guattari was a fellow Frenchman, a psychoanalyst who was born in Villeneuve-les-Sablons in northern France. In 1972, they published a book together where they introduced and discussed the concept of deterritorialization. This is quite obviously the opposite of territorialization, which refers to the restraints that keep a system in organized check. Deterritorialization is the concept of removing those restraints, thus the link that Nick Landrieu drew from deterritorialization to accelerationism. So, in the 1990s, Land was part of a group which was founded at the University of Warwick. They called themselves the Cybernetic Culture Research Unit, or the CCRU. Yes, I'm aware of its resonance to some kind of Terminator movie organization or something. They may have deliberately named the group this way, actually. They were a collective of renegade academics who assembled, in part, to purposefully undermine the cheery utopianism of the time, to dismantle the status quo, as it were. According to one of the group's co-founders, Sadie Plant, the CCRU published numerous articles, held in-person conferences, and spoke at length about their desired plans to remove the societal stability of the Western world. They also did lots of drugs, which ultimately slowed their forward steps. The CCRU eventually burned itself out, and its members went on to do other things, but this is where the left-wing and right-wing split began. Another influential member of the CCRU was a Mark Fisher, who started blogging under the name K-Punk. His blog was titled Cyberpunk, Cybernetic Culture Research Unit. If you were thinking, who the hell reads blogs, remember this was the 1990s. Blogs were the TikTok of its day. Fisher, or K-Punk, attracted quite a large following, and eventually co-wrote a manifesto that became the foundational document of left-wing accelerationism, which became known to devoted followers as LX. It's Nick Land's write-ins that are considered foundational to the right-wing accelerationism, known now as RX. Both sides envision a post-capitalistic future and a technological singularity. LX is concerned with producing more equality and a more just world after the revolution, and they believe that technology is the key to improving the human condition. This isn't that far off from the Lords of Light novel, really, if you think about it. That damn book creeping back in again. Anyway, Nick Land, meanwhile, has gone further to the right, particularly since 2013. He has been associated with a far-right neo-reaction movement known as NRX. NRX evolved out of the blog of software engineer named Chris Yarvin. Yarvin posts under the net handle name Mencius Moldbug. They are anti-democracy and pro-authoritarian to the point that some of the NRX members actually criticized Donald Trump during his presidency for not abolishing the US Constitution and declaring himself King of the United States. I know. The collapse of Western civilization. Choose a side between K-Punk or Menacious Moldbug. Who's your daddy? Now, obviously there are some dangerous ideas that we are walking on the edge of here. But keep in mind that most of the individuals I've mentioned here genuinely think that they are actually getting us closer to a better world and are acting in the best interests of our future society. Further, they hold confidence in the knowledge that their current work will directly lead to a better world. They hold this thought based on the historic philosophy of the four turnings. What are the four turnings? You're familiar with the theory of the four turnings, right? No? For those of you who aren't, I'll explain. Now, I'm going to give total credit here, by the way, to the author Neil Howe. It's his book titled The Fourth Turning Is Here, from where I source the vast majority of my research for this subject. It's a hefty book, sitting at almost 600 pages, but an interesting one, should you wish to know more. Again, this isn't promoted, but I'm fairly sure you can get the book on Amazon. It was only published around a month ago, so secondhand copies might be hard to come by. The book is a follow-up to 1997's The Fourth Turning, authored again by Howe and also historian William Strauss. This one you can get pre-used for around $5, so it might be a cheaper and more accessible at 400 pages entry into the concept of the four turnings. Anyway, book reviews aside, the concept of the four turnings is a polarizing one, for sure. Some individuals, academics, historians, scientists, and philosophers believe wholeheartedly in this concept and swear by the theory that it promotes. Others, again including academics, historians, scientists, and philosophers, believe that it's entirely garbage and equal to the writings of Nostradamus. The basic ideology of the four turnings goes like this. The foreturnings theory, also known as generational theory, makes the argument that civilization operates on a cyclical basis. Now, for the purpose of this example, I'm going to talk about the United States cycle. But the same also applies to the UK cycle, European cycle, Australian and New Zealand cycles, Russian cycles, and Chinese cycles, and multiple others. Now, each cycle lasts for about 80 to 90 years, or roughly the length of an average human lifespan. They name these cycles saeculum, which is an old Roman word that has a similar meaning. Each of these cycles is made up of what they call four turnings, kind of like seasons of a civilization. Each of those seasons are given the following names: the high, the awakening, the unraveling, and the crisis. Each of these turnings lasts about 20 to 30 years. Once the full cycle, or four turnings, is complete, the cycle resets itself and begins once again. It works basically like this. Each saeculum is defined by a major crisis point, a world-changing event that upturns established institutions and is usually punctuated by a massive war, or total war, in that parlance. This is the last turning in a saeculum, so they call this the fourth turning. Now, many proponents of this theory consider World War II to be the most recent crisis era. Following on from the crisis era is the high period, or the first turning of a new saeculum. This is when peace returns and society is on an upswing. It's an optimistic era where societal cohesion is high, community involvement is strong, and a collective vision for the future is widely shared. In the United States, the post-war years of the 1950s and early 1960s were the most recent high period, which is why it's often romanticized as the quote, good old days, when people say they want to make things great again. The economy, personal wealth, home ownership, employment, image on the world stage, civic spirit, and patriotic assimilation were all significant high points for the country during this time. The second turning is called the awakening. This is when the strict societal conformity of the high period starts to wane and people start to search for more individual autonomy, often through spirituality and cultural rebellion. The awakening years are marked by cultural upheaval, social change, and a burgeoning generational gap. This is analogous to the conscientious revolution of the hippies in the 60s and 70s. The third turning is the unraveling period. This is basically the complete opposite of the high period, where collective energy is at its lowest point and individualism is at its highest. It's marked by materialism, consumerism, a lack of trust in government, authority and institutions, and, as a result, inequality begins to grow and divisions form in society. Divisions that eventually look back to a crisis period. Again, this is an era of destruction, often involving war or revolution, in which institutional life is destroyed and rebuilt in response to a perceived threat to the nation's survival. After the crisis, civic authority revives, cultural expression redirects towards community purpose, and people begin to locate themselves as members of a larger group. This brings us close to the saeculum, and the cycle starts all over again. The reason this works, and the reason it's called generational theory, is because each generation is distinctly shaped by the turning that they brought up in, and, as they get older, they seek to change the world away from the values that they were imposed upon them when they were young. Some might find the thought of the turnings quite depressing, as they might consider it to take away free thought and invoke a kind of destiny within existence. But the turnings do not do that at all. They merely state that culture and society shape individuals and the collectives who exist within them. It's not revolutionary, it's basic psychology for those who have studied it. Everybody wants to undo the problems that they inherited. So there's an idea or common theory that isn't related to the four turnings theory but does support it and comes from psychological and generational research. It goes something like: a generation that goes through war and experiences all the terrible and horrific things that war brings produces a collective psyche that comes out of the conflict, never wanting to experience war ever again. Their children grow up having heard all the stories about how terrible the war is from their parents. they see the physical and mental scars that their parents carry, so that generation also want to avoid war at all costs. But the grandchildren come along, and they want to rebel against their parents, so they begin to romanticize the purpose and the greatness of their grandparents' generation. Then war and conflict become attractive again. Anyway, according to this theory, the different generations fit into different archetypes based on the turning that they were brought up in. These archetypes are called prophets, nomads, heroes, and artists. As time progresses through the different turnings, each generational archetype has a different role to play in those turnings. Just to bring this point home, supporters of the first turnings theory consider World War II to be the most recent crisis point. 80 years prior to that was the Civil War, and about 85 years prior to that was the US Revolutionary War. 75 or 80 years before that was the Glorious Revolution in England. It keeps going further and further back in history, and it does have relevant historical support and evidence to give the theory credence. For those of you who aren't keeping count, if World War II was the last crisis point, 80 to 90 years after that would be, yes, well, now, or within the next 10 years at least. Look out of your window. We aren't experiencing any kind of societal crisis right now, though, right? Exactly. As I previously mentioned, the four turnings are not prophetic. They are also data-driven psychological and societal outcomes based on the historical data that came before. But it's the four turnings and their undeniable accuracy that fuels accelerationism and their ideas. But, and that's a big but, with all that said, is the theory of the four turnings and accelerationism and the kind of ideas that float around them just a means to justify horrific acts, the likes we have seen over and over again? The theories themselves on their own are simply fuel for political, societal, and cultural discourse. Yet, it's what is done in the name of those theories, much like religion, politics, and many other things, that leads us down a dark alley. What do you think? What are your thoughts on the four turnings? What about accelerationism? I'd love to hear what you think. On the 14th of May, 2022, a man walked into the Topps Friendly Market on Jefferson Avenue in Buffalo, New York. The neighborhood is predominantly black, and it was mid-afternoon, so people were going about their daily business. The man opened fire, killing 10 people and injuring a further 3. The killer live-streamed the massacre on Twitch and had written a manifesto explaining his actions. The shooter was a white supremacist by the name of Peyton S. Gendron, but known more commonly now as a piece of shit. Anyway, one line which was taken from his manifesto stated, quote, "Stability and comfort are the enemies of revolutionary change. Therefore, we must destabilize and discomfort society whenever possible." The title from that page was, quote, "Destabilization and Accelerationism, Tactics for Victory." Destabilization and accelerationism were also quoted from within the manifesto left by the gunman who killed 51 people at two mosques in Christchurch in New Zealand in 2019. And if you want to link accelerationism proponents, then you could even argue that Charles Manson and his family firmly had their hands dirty with the actions back in 1969. Was their attempts to trigger a race war, which would destroy society and have them come out as victors, not an attempt at accelerationism? In recent years, neo-Nazi groups have been arrested for stockpiling weapons and explosives, as well as both planning and in some cases committing violent crimes in the name of accelerationism. Whilst the theories of the four turnings and accelerationism on paper might make a number of you think, that's interesting, the reality of how it looks in practice is certainly sobering and horrifying. When it comes down to it, accelerationism and the four turnings theory are just another justification that terrible people are using to do terrible things. Madmen who just want to watch the world burn, legitimizing their actions with historical and scientific discourse. Are they not a new emerging threat? Some historians who are heavily critical of the four turnings theory state that the concept is closer to astrology or prognostication than to actual history, a sort of zodiac system for those that want to be seen as thinkers. I won't support the theory, nor will I pull it apart. I'll leave that for you to do with the fact from tonight's show. I am keen to know what you make of the concept, though. You know how to get in touch. As a final point, and just to touch on where we began in this episode, how are billionaires actively trying to destroy the world, and how are they using methods of accelerationism that we discussed? Well, that's the rub. The rich never get their hands dirty, and would certainly never commit crimes of the common man, right? Well, there is a subset of accelerationism that's becoming really popular right now. It's called effective accelerationism, and it's different from what I've been talking about here tonight. It's not so much focused on the collapse of society. It's really more about wanting to just unleash technology and let it progress as fast as possible, because, as its followers see it, that's the best possible way to get out of the problems that we are experiencing right now, even the problems that come with unleashing technology. Now, I can't help but notice that most of the people who ascribe to this sort of theory is tech bros and venture capitalists that have the most to gain, be it power or financially, by unleashing said technology. They tend to identify themselves on social media with the tag E/ACC. Individuals like the CIO of Ecombinator and Initialized Capital, Gary Tan, venture capital fund billionaire and founder of Netscape, Mark Andreessen, or the infamous Big Pharma bro and financial criminal Martin Shkreli, who I have had the misfortune of meeting in New York in 2009. But that's a story for another episode. Oh, and no list of the E/ACC folk is complete without the founder of SpaceX, CEO of Tesla and X, formerly Twitter, and the co-founder of PayPal, OpenAI and Neuralink, Elon Musk. Like I said, bros. These guys aren't necessarily politically motivated as much as they are harboring almost a religious devotion to the idea of technology as the savior of mankind. And although they do tend to lean a little bit more authoritarian just because democratic institutions tend to move more slowly in these areas, in fact, in October, Mark Andreessen posted a blog post that sort of laid out the tenets of effective accelerationism, and he called it the Techno-Optimist Manifesto. Yep. Another manifesto. You can search for it if you want to read it. I'm not going to post any links. It's easy enough to find, though. As I previously said, it's really not so much about the collapse of mankind, although the people who argue against it would say that their policies would have the same result anyway. It's just achieved with a pen rather than a rifle. However you see things right now, you can't deny that it does feel like we're at a bit of a crisis point at the moment. I have a lot of anxiety about the future. For those keeping up to date with current affairs, how can you not? I do think things are going to get a lot worse before they get better, and that's because we are so extremely divided right now, and I don't know how we would get out of this situation without something historically awful happening. Think about it. How bad would something have to be to get everyone in the Western countries to put down their grievances and come together to fix things, to unite? I genuinely can't think of anything, and that's kind of terrifying. But whatever that thing might be, do you want to accelerate it? Either way, no matter what your thoughts are, we need to get to a better world.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.